You are listening to Pump News Podcast number 406.
I was born in the wagon of a traveling show. My mama used to dance for the money they'd throw. Mama would do whatever he could. Preach a little gospel. Sell a couple bottles of Dr. Good.
Welcome back to the Pump News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we have got a jam-packed episode for you tonight. We're going to be talking about Effed Up's surprise new album. We're going to be talking about Against Me's surprise new album. We're going to be talking about The Coup's new surprise album. We're going to be talking about Target. We're going to be talking about The Daily News, and we're going to be talking about maybe the original glam rock. Well, not the original glam rocker, but an early glam rocker. Guy that was super influential on punk. A guy that was super influential on art rock. Guy that was super influential on everybody except for Gene Vincent. We're going to be talking about none other than David Bowie. And we are also here with reviews writer, news editor, interviewee, and interviewer, Tricky Ricky Frankel. Tricky Ricky, what's happening?
Hey, guys. It's good to be back. It's been a few episodes, I think. So it's been good. Got some cool stuff to announce. And we'll get into that a little later, I think. So, but I'm just glad to be back.
And speaking of a guy that's back in black, back on the attack, back with a blackjack, and is the Mac, we're also here with, quite ironically, Adam White. Adam White, what's happening?
That rhyme was not up to your usual standards.
I wasn't rhyming.
Of lyricism. Well, I don't know. Like your flow was off.
I was actually just trying. Okay? I was trying to just to do a low key intro this time, because if you do big blown out ones every single time, then they're not special. You know what I mean? So for this one, I was just doing strictly straight, strictly low key, strictly store brand. But if you went to fanciness every time, I can bring it, Adam. I can bring it.
I don't want you to burn yourself out. Like I want you to like, you know, it. You know how like I don't want to talk too much about politics because Ricky's on the show here, but you know how Donald Trump believes that scientifically you only have so much energy in you, and that once you use it up, you die.
You mean from like, I did not know that, but you mean from like when you're born?
No, that someone at some point in his life asked him about exercise, and he expressed some sort of view that like the human body has a limited battery supply of energy. And by exercising, you deplete that supply and you will die sooner.
I believe that's actually like a Scientology concept, or that's branched off Scientology.
I don't know. It's like something from like the 1800s when they were still, you know, like measuring the bumps on your brain to decide if you're a criminal
like,
or not.
The body has four natural elements in it. Water, fire, you know what I mean? It's like
yeah, exactly. So that's like your ability to like to lay down you know, excellent flow is that you don't want to deplete it because you only got so many in you.
Actually, Adam,
I'm doing great. I don't know why. I'm having a relatively good week. Well, I think I know why.
Why?
I've been affirmed, John.
You're a judge?
Well, no, I don't know what that means.
Oh, not confirmed. No. Affirmed.
I am confirmed against my will. But no.
Really? It was against your will at the time? Did they drag you into church and you were like, no?
No, it was like when was the Catholic confirmation? It had been like eighth grade for me, I think. And so this was just about the time when all of this started to kind of smell like bullshit to me, but I couldn't quite put that into words. But at that point, I'm a good student and I'm going to school. And like, this is the thing you do, right? Like you go to, you do your math test, you know, you study for your spelling test. You do your homework, you get your confirmation. Like that was all just sort of the deal when you were in a Catholic grade school. So, you know, there was not a lot of, you know, not a lot of pushback from me on it at the time, because like, well, you know, it was just another thing that you had to do, is sort of going through the motions of being a kid. But, you know, a couple years later, I'm just like, why did I do that? That was unnecessary for everyone, given my true calling is evil.
Well, they have it. Adam White rejecting Jesus on the podcast. Well, I'm quite like surprised.
Wasted everybody's time there. I feel bad, but no, I'm feeling good, John. There's music stories this week that have made me feel good. There is, you know, that I feel like my projects are bearing fruit. Like, I got cool things in the works that I'm excited about doing from a punk news standpoint that I've been more excited about doing than I have been in a while. Just like shit's going well. I'm good.
Adam, I'm happy for you, and this is good, and this is proper, and this is great. And punk news is doing pretty good right now. I think we're hitting a lot of the news stories we need to be hitting. I think we're doing pretty good with the interviews. I think that's going to increase in the future. I think we got some cool features coming out. And I'm glad that everybody's bearing the – I'm going to steal the syllogy that Adam White just used. But I'm glad that the Punk News tree is bearing fruit for all of us to enjoy and for the readers to enjoy as well. And speaking of Punk News bearing fruit, I believe Ricky is bearing fruit himself. Ricky, you got a bun in the oven?
Is plump with child.
Well, first of all, I do want to say I meant to post this in the group, but I got to tell you, we – during this time of year, it does get pretty slow, and we've been managing to fill up the whole day of stories for a few weeks now, which during the summer can get kind of hard to do. So I'm actually really happy we've been able to do that. My announcement is something I've been keeping under wraps the idea came to me around January, but I've been working on it probably since like late May, early May. So some people know about this already, maybe like 7 people aside from my family.
Hold on, pause.
Okay.
John.
Yeah.
If you're one of the listeners right now, what is Ricky about to hit now? Right? So I'm gonna give the listeners a choice and they can pick. A, he has built a homunculus and has brought it to life. B, dirty bomb. C, network of tunnels beneath Los Angeles. It's only one of those three. I'm really going. I'm hoping it's homunculus.
No, I'm gonna say D, in timeshare investment plan where the more people you recruit, the more you get paid, but you don't necessarily get to visit the timeshare right away.
You know, you bring up like bombs and stuff like that. Then the whole rumor of me setting the Capitol Records tower on fire again is going to be brought up, and I don't want that.
Anyway. No one brought that up but you right now.
me think he doth protest too much, as Shakespeare would say.
Literally, it's still standing, so I think it's fine.
How convenient. Mm-hmm.
All right, continue.
So, yeah, this has been in the works for months now. I am self-publishing my own book, my first book ever. I have family members that have done this. I have some friends that have done this, and I think this is the right time to do it. It's called I'm Outta Here, a collection of interviews and anecdotes from the punk scene 2014 to 2018. And basically, it is a collection of all of the interviews that I've done throughout my music journalism journey, if you want to call it. I'm not going to call it a career. Not just from Punk News, but from other places that I've written for as well as interviews that I've done from before I was ever on the Punk News staff. So, and what it's also going to have is a bunch of anecdotes of kind of write-ups before each interview about what the band was going through at that time and what I was kind of how I found them, just different stories that kind of go around how the interview came to be, that kind of stuff. I'm hoping to have this thing out by mid-November. That's the goal, in time for the Christmas season. I'm Outta Here is a reference just to the Ramones live album, We're Outta Here. And then, if I don't know, did either of you take a look at the cover yet? No?
I did. Whose jacket is that? Is that you?
That is my old jacket from when I was in my teens and very, very early 20s. But for those of you who have not seen it yet, it is. I did my best to recreate the Against Me album as the Eternal Cowboy book cover, and the back of it will actually, the back of the book will actually be my back from that photo as well. So just to kind of let you guys, everyone know, there'll be interviews with, you know, C.J. Ramone, members from Rage Against the Machine, Swinging Utters, Off With Their Heads, X, Interrupters, Ezra Kyer from Morning Glory, and there's going to be about 40 or so of them. There's going to be picture professionally professional photos from all these people playing live. I have some photographer friends I've made over the years that are willing to help me out. And again, this is self-published. I am putting my own money up to do this. You can find the book at imoutofherebook.com or imoutofherebook.storeenvy.com. Outa is O-U-T-T-A. There's going to be some bands that maybe you never heard of that I've interviewed that are going to be on this. They're going to be in this. And again, hopefully you have it out by mid-November. It's going to be paperback, around 325 pages. It might be more, to be honest. And if you go to the Store Envy store, you can buy it normal, or for a few bucks extra, for what it's worth, I'll autograph it for you for only a few bucks more. So that's my pitch. I'm really excited about this. I've always wanted to write a book. So we'll see how this does. It'll be a limited, a limited amount of copies will be printed at first. Just because printing costs are excruciatingly high. And there'll be some other than interviews, there'll be some other cool stuff in there as well, some lists and some extras as well. So this is my first attempt. I'm not expecting to be on the New York Times bestseller list on this, but I think this could be really cool. I'm going to do my best to get it maybe in some local record shops as well. But for now, go to imoutofherebook.com. And and if you get it, first of all, thank you. And I hope you really enjoy it. So that's my pitch. Yeah, that's it. Thank you guys for letting me kind of just plug it real quick.
I mean, Ricky, if you don't end up on the New York Times bestseller list, there's always the crime section that you can get on by
The FBI's most wanted list.
Yeah, you know, like box of matches, Capitol Records. I mean, you can get in the New York Times one way or the other, right?
It's their own fault, Ricky. It's their own fault. No shame.
But in all seriousness, this is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. So I'm looking forward to. I'm still in the midst of putting it together, and it's a lot of work. But again, hopefully November, and yeah. So
kudos on doing it. I mean, I think it's sort of like that's one of those things that rattles around in the head of anyone that's like a writer of any stripe. Is that like, yeah. Oh, at some point I'm going to do a book, right? So here you have an interesting like cross section of people that are on this podcast. So we have Tricky Ricky here that has written a book and is actually trying to sell it for money to people in the real world. We have John who has a history, I believe, a history. Have you written one or two?
Four.
Four. Fuck. Okay. John, who's written like a whole host of books in his life. They're fiction, right? They're not
they're short stories, yeah.
Yeah, short stories, right? So John, who's done that kind of thing, and you have me on the other end of the scale that has literally written a 50,000 word NaNoWriMo novel at one point in my life that is sitting in a Google Doc somewhere.
What's wrong with you?
You know, I was doing it to make the word count so they would send me stickers, right? So I did. They sent me stickers. But it probably reads like something I wrote in a coffee shop for the course of a month and not a thing that humans would want to read, right? But, like, it's, of course, like, you know, I've got like, that same bug in my brain that Ricky is entertaining here, where I'm like God, one day I want to write a music thing. I just haven't figured out what the hook is, right? But yeah, that's
What's wrong with you? Put this out, Adam. I demand it.
It is not for humans. It's not for other people. I mean, John, it's so erotic. My God, it's so
50,000 erotica.
50,000 words, at least 40,000 of them. Just dicks and butts and oh man.
One of the things I did want to do is, you know, I've done a lot of these, and you know, after we put up an interview, which is a lot of work, regardless if it's a medium sized one to one of John's massive, you know, the Jell-O Biafra one that John did for Jell-O Week comes to mind. That one was massive. And what happens is, you know, these kind of go into the ether after a while, and no one gets to see them. And I mean, listen, I know both of you have been doing this a lot longer than me. I've been doing this, I mean, this is my fourth year. I just wanted something kind of tangible to put together just to kind of show like what I've done. And it's not like we don't get paid to do this, which is, I'm not complaining, but at all, because I love doing it regardless. But it's just something I wanted to just show like, yeah, this is an accomplishment. I've done a lot for at least my, for the time I've been doing this. So I think that's cool. Just kind of, this is kind of a neat thing just to have. Yeah. I mean, I'm not looking to, you know,
well, yeah, and I mean,
a house or anything like that. And one other thing, just real quick, just to show my appreciation. If you look closely in the cover, the Samantha Barrett sent us all like punk news pins, the white P, and I am wearing it over the Dead Kennedys logo. So there is an ode to punk news on there as well.
Ricky, how dare you besmirch the Dead Kennedys with that? No, I mean, what you're talking about really is like putting down, as like, it's like a mile marker is that the good way to say it? Like,
a good milestone. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, and to a degree, John, that's why I was coming on in the intro here and saying that, like, I felt really good about something is, so there's a, I mean, this isn't, I guess I can talk about this. It's not important to anyone, but all right. So, you know, I'm a juror on this, Polaris Music Prize up here in Canada, which is this big, we give like $50,000 to an artist every year, fucked up one at 1 year. And right. So it's this thing where there's like 200 like Canadian music journalists kind of thing that are participating in this thing that like vote about
their. Adam White gets a donation of $25,000 each year out of the blue. Strange.
I wish. But I mean, so someone emailed me from Polaris earlier today. So there's the actual winner gets announced at a gala in Toronto in September. And basically they have like all 10 bands come out there and, you know, they'll perform at the gala and everyone kind of like rubs elbows or whatever the word is for it. And, you know, schmoozes and dresses up nice and stuff like that. And then somewhere in the back room, like the grand jury is deliberating over the 10 thing shortlist, the 10 band shortlist and picking one. Right. So this being like a gala, like they try to like do it, you know, do the whole thing properly. Well, someone emailed me and was like, hey, you know, among the shortlist this year is one of Adam's favorite bands. They're like, do you want to, can you write like the pitch for them that's going to run in the program at the gala?
Oh, wow. That's neat.
I was like, oh, I'm like, I'm incredibly honored to be asked to do that. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Sure. So, you know, but it was just one of those things where I'm just been sort of like squirreling away, working on all my little projects, especially my Canadian music projects up here for a while. And I'm like, I don't know if this resonates with anyone in particular, but it resonates, I guess, with enough of someone that when they were like, you know, who's going to write the pitch for this band? It was like, Adam, that's a good idea. And then they emailed me. And so just like mile markers, right? Like, you know, you're doing all this for free, but like every once in a while, you tick off a little box, you know, you interview one of your favorite bands. You get to go to a big major show. You get to meet one of your heroes. You get to do something like this. You write a book, right? That kind of stuff that like keeps you from going fucking crazy. So those are useful.
Well, that's awesome, Adam. That's cool. You know what? To keep us from going crazy, let's play a tune. Who's got a jam?
I put mine down for second, but if you want me to go first, I don't mind.
Go ahead, Ricky. Why don't you play yours?
Yeah, then... you go first. This is your big announcement here. So,
all right, cool. So, you know, I don't know what happened. I somehow stumbled upon this song while I was at the gym listening to music, and I forgot about this band, and I really loved this song. And then I didn't really follow up on the band after the 7-inch came out. And I looked them up and nothing's really happened since like 2015 or anything like that, at least on their Facebook page. So, and I remember when I first started reading, you know, after a couple of years of reading punk news, like this band was supposed to kind of blow up. They signed to Epitaph. They were on Carson Daly and all this stuff. They put out a record in 2014 on Epitaph. And I don't know what happened after that. I guess they just kind of went on a hiatus. But I've always really liked the song. I have the 7-inch from Sabbath Production somewhere. So this is, and maybe you guys can answer this, but the band I'm talking about is Roll the Tanks. Do you remember them?
I was a big Roll of Tanks fan, man. Like I rocked them all the time.
God damn it, John.
John was an original tank head.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they called
them. We actually call ourselves the Roller Derby, you know.
So, Roller Derby.
Get it.
I remember this band trying to somewhat blowing up, and I'm like, and now nothing's happens. So this is the song Goodnight Jimmy Lee from the Roll the Tanks album Broke Till Midnight. It was also on the Goodnight Jimmy Lee EP that came out through Sabbath. So here's Goodnight Jimmy Lee.
Goodnight Jimmy Lee by Roll the Tanks. I remember hearing that back in the 70s. We used to pay our nickel to ride the train down to the docks and check out Roll the Tanks, and man, it was great memories. I remember they opened up for Nazareth one time. It was great. Anyway, speaking of things that are great, effed up, a perennial favorite upon Adam White and myself, and a perennial hater towards Tricky Ricky, Effed Up are putting out a new record. They announced it out of the blue, as is the style of the day. And the new record is called, let's see here. Oh, it's called Dose Your Dreams. And I absolutely love the cover of this record. It's got kind of like a smiley face on acid melting into a giant city, and the city's melting as well. It's got 18 tracks, or close to 18 tracks. And it's a concept album about David from David Comes to Life, about him time traveling and getting sent on a mental journey. Because an old woman sent her boyfriend out on a mental journey some time ago, and he never came back. Here's what Damian Abraham had to say about this track. He said, give me one second here. Here's what Damian Abraham had to say about the new album, rather. He said, Mike and I grew up together, and I really feel like this is the completion of his life's work to this point. I am proud to have been involved in this record in a way I've never been before. This band doesn't always get along, but I'm honored to be along for this ride. And I found that statement to be very interesting for numerous reasons. Number one, Damian Abraham, maybe he's just being humble, but I think the outside impression is that Effed Up is basically Mike Halachok and Damian and other people working with them. But he seems to be suggesting that it's almost like a Greg Ginn situation, that Halachok is the main guy and that Abraham is just a supporter of Halachok. I don't know if I'm reading too much into that. Second thing to take from that is One of the things that is most fascinating about Effed Up is how they started out as a straight edge band, or maybe they weren't ever straight edge, but they had straight edge ideals, and now they're totally like the most drugged out band there is. Like even their new album is centered around the concept of drugs, as was Year of the Snake. So I find that evolution fascinating, and I am pumped for this record. They put out a new single.
Raise
Your Voice, Joyce. There's going to be two mixes of that, the album mix and the single mix, and I dug it, and I'm excited.
It's 18 tracks. This is a big record. It's a double record. So, I mean, if you're getting it on vinyl, it's two discs. I mean, I'm sure it's two CDs if you're a CD person, but I don't know what that means. But, you know, it is a mammoth record. The number of, like, contributors and guests and everything that they have on here is pretty substantial and pretty enormous. And I don't know necessarily how much traction some of the names on here might have, like, outside of the Canadian context, but like there's a shit ton of people. I'll get into that in a sec who are involved in this. So the one thing, John, that I want your immediate impression on, because I thought about you and I was looking at the details of this. So this record looks to be enormous. Like tons of contributors. It's 18 songs. It is fucked up playing in the realm of Excess, where they've done, which where they've played before. I mean, like David Comes to Life is probably the closest analogy. I mean, Glass Boys seems like a much smaller record compared to this one.
Well, certainly it is. Glass Boys were only like 12 tracks and it was one disc. This is 18.
Yeah, but like conceptually smaller right? So now I know that you had voiced that, you know, you wanted to see Fucked Up maybe just like go crazy and angry with what they're doing. I'm looking at this. This totally seems like the kind of thing where you're going to get to like track four and it's going to be, you know, an opera ballad or something. Like I bet you that the actual playthrough of this record goes pretty crazy. Like this is, but my gut is telling me like this is going to be a fucking white album.
Yes.
Are you okay with that?
I am okay with that. Had I my true druthers, I think I would. If I made this album in my brain, I would do a very whacked out, trippy, very mean sounding record. Basically an Integrity record, really. Maybe even far further out than an Integrity record. But if I can't have that, what I don't want is kind of 3-minute poppy-ish tracks. David Comes to Light, Glass Boys was okay. It was a little boring. The tracks kind of started, but they didn't go anywhere. These tracks here, we've got like 7-minute tracks. We've got 5-minute tracks. We've got like, I think, a 9-minute track. As long as it goes, my issue with Glass Boys is it didn't seem to go for it, you know. David Comes to Life definitely went for it because it was such a heavy concept, and also how, like, you could play it in reverse or forward, and it would work both ways, and how it, like, circulates, you know. Of course, Chemistry of Common Life really went for it because it was kind of like their Quantum Leap punk album, even though, Not Both Worlds. What was the first album called? Not Both Worlds. Hidden World. That kind of forecast it. Chemcom went for it. It opened up with a flute, and you know, just was extremely daring for punk records, especially at the time. They're going for it. They're not holding anything back. And even if it's not hard, that's okay. I want it to be daring. Is more important to me than hard. The two kinds of music I like the most are daring and hard music. And my favorite kind of music is music that is hard and daring. If this is just daring and not super hard, that's cool, because Effed Up has proven that they can do excellent jobs at far out music. Year of the Snake, for example. So I'm very excited for this. And also, it's important to remember, you don't always want your favorite bands to give you what you want. Because if your favorite bands give you what you want every single time, you get Motorhead. And Motorhead is awesome, but pretty much every Motorhead record is awesome. But if the band challenges you sometimes, and sometimes it's a swing and a miss, and sometimes it's a home run, you really, if you ask me, you get a more rewarding catalog at the end of the day, because they took chances that you didn't foresee, and it worked out, and that's what this record will be. And I am psyched, because I feel as though they felt a little aimless with Glass Boys, because David Comes to Life was a huge success. What did you do after that? Did you do another double album? Well, not really, because you don't want to become like cliche. They put out a single album. It wasn't great. Now they're like, we've got nothing left to lose, as it were. Let's just go for it and be totally crazy. And that's what this is. And also, I think, not to drone on, I think that's maybe what David Comes to Life missed a little bit of. David Comes to Life was cool. It could have been crazier. I think this is the crazier mode of David Comes to Life, as it were. And I am psyched. And I love the cover. I love the cover.
So I want to kind of give you my reasoning for this being like a white album kind of thing. Because
when you say white Adam, you mean each member kind of contributes on their own and it's not very cohesive, or you mean it's just a huge mess of different things built in a long span of time? Four years for this album to take place, which is very long for F'd Up.
So, I mean, I can't speak to the cohesion of it. Now, I'm one of these people that because I didn't, because of course, because I wasn't fucking born in the 60s, right? Or the 50s. Like, I never experienced the White Album when anyone was experiencing it new. I experienced it when it already had all of that baggage attached to it. So by the first time I sat down and listened to the White Album, I, of course, kind of knew what the game was. But, and I approached, like, the White Album expecting it to be a big, crazy, expansive hodgepodge, and that was what was delivered to me. So to me, like, the White Album's always been something that, like, met expectations as I hit it. But it's also something that, from like a song to song standpoint, goes wildly all over the place. And I'm pretty sure this is going to be that, if only because there are at least half a dozen people credited with lead vocals on this that aren't Damien. And that is just from the variety sake of not having not having the lead singer sing all the songs, that, like, that's gonna matter, right? So let me go through, like, a little bit of, like, the credits on this record here, because it's you can really, really dig into it here. So let me see. I'm just going to start going down here. So there's a ton of stuff on here that's credited to Owen Pallett. Owen Pallett is a violinist. He played, like, all this, like, crazy indie violin stuff under the band name of Final Fantasy. And he had, like, a lot of, like, Pitchfork play sort of, like, back in the, you know, earlier 2000s and things like that. So Owen Pallett is all over this thing. Let's see here. Lead vocal on track 12 and 17 by Jonah, right? Lead vocal on 11 by Alice Hanlon. Lead vocals on 14 by Ryan Tong. Now, Ryan Tong plays for a hardcore band out of Toronto called Shit, like S.H.I.T, like super angry hardcore thing. Lead vocal on 15 by Ben Cook. Lead vocal on 16 by Jennifer Castle. So Jennifer Castle is a slightly country tinged, say, singer songwriter that is huge in, like, the Canadian indie music world. She just had a record that came out called Angels of Death that is just gorgeous. Like Jennifer Castle is one of these people that has, I think, like, more artistic respect and people sort of rallying around her than I've seen of any artist in a long, long time. Who else is on this thing? Jay Maskus of Dinosaur Jr. on 16. Here's a weird one. So track 18 has two co-vocalists on it. One of them is Lito Pineda. So Lito won the Polaris Music Prize last year. She's a she's an indigenous Colombian Canadian artist that does this, like, crazy art pop stuff. So Lito's amazing. But the other co-vocalist on that track is Mary Margaret O'Hara. Mary Margaret O'Hara had, like, a one-hit record in Canada in, like, 1988, and then she went on to do backing vocals for, like, a whole bunch of people. She's a little bit of, like, a name in the Canadian music industry, but I don't know if anyone outside of Canada knows who she is. It's strange to see her mentioned in this context. I saw a lot of people on Twitter looking at the credits and going, like, Mary Margaret O'Hara, like, what a random thing. Now, random Mary Margaret O'Hara thing is, John, she did the backing vocals on the Morrissey song November Spawned a Monster.
Oh, excellent Morrissey song.
Which was his 1990 single. So anyways, So let's see. Mary Margaret O'Hara's on here. Lito's on here. Dude from Shit. But, like, you have Ben Cook doing leads on songs. You have Jonah Falco doing leads on songs. I'm trying to read through this gigantic mash of a paragraph that's on Bandcamp right now, so I'll stop. But, like, there's a ton of people that are on this thing, and a lot of them are doing lead on various tracks. So, they're, like, this is not going to sound like Glass Boys. Like, it's not going to be 10 songs in a row of Damien doing Damien's stuff. And, like, I love Damien's stuff, so don't get me wrong there. But it's going to be a very varied animal of a record. Now, whether that is a glorious mess or whether that is a mess, I guess, kind of remains to be seen. But
well, listen, I got to say, I think it's going to be a glory. I mean, whenever Effed Up really goes all out, you know, Year the Pig, Year the Dragon, Year the Snake, Let Likes Be Cheered by Likes, it's always a home run or close to a home run. I will say, Adam, I must counter, I wouldn't say the weakness of Glass Boys was on Damien. If anything, I think it wasn't enough Damien. I wanted harder Damien on that, and instead we got kind of vibed out, chilled out, reflective Damien. I want mean Damien, like we hear on Year of the Dragon.
Oh, no, no, I wasn't giving Damien the blame for... I like Glass Boys, but I wasn't giving him the blame for Glass Boys or anything like that. I was just saying that, like, Glass Boys would have been, you know, 10 or 12 songs of Damien in a row.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this is definitely not that just by the credits alone.
Also, right, I think he listens to the Punk News podcast because I've listened to his amazing podcast, Turned Out a Punk, which you should all listen to. He's made references to it like two or three times, the Punk News podcast. So if you listen, hi, Damien, we're huge fans of the band.
Can
we get test presses?
Oh, fuck. I mean, I'm going to go. I mean, they have a version of this that they have like a vinyl version of this, and they have a version of this that they've called Peak Vinyl.
Yeah. What does that phrase mean? I actually ordered that. What does Peak Vinyl mean? Is that just a meaningless phrase that means more expensive colored vinyl? Or what is Peak
Vinyl? I think they mean like this is the Uber vinyl. Like, if you want to collect some shit, this is the one.
One other thing, and let's talk about this briefly. There's a single, Raise Your Voice to Joyce. Adam, this is their first black and white cover single since Generations, because they famously became a color single on what was the one that became a cover single? Not one, the one after Generations. I forget. Anyways, this is their first black and white covered single in about 10 years. What does that signify, if anything?
What does that signify? I have no idea. I need to know that, like, who's actually running the signal? Is it, or the single? Is it, Is it Merge that's doing it? They didn't do it through a smaller label or anything? Is that, yeah, I have to... The only thing I know about the single is that I keep seeing people talking about it, and I have not acquired it, and I sort of have to.
Well, you can't get it out September, but I would recommend buying it because Effed Up single... Like, honestly, Effed Up, the companion stuff that Effed Up puts out with their albums, is as good as the albums themselves. I hope they put out another mixtape. They usually put out mixtapes to coincide with albums that have, like, snippets from, like, old stuff, new stuff, different versions. I love the Effed Up mixtapes, and the singles are great because they're different versions and exclusive B-sides. So as a collector, it's friggin' awesome.
I just have a few thoughts, because I know you guys...
Isn't this cover amazing, Ricky? Isn't this cover one of the best covers you've ever seen?
I was going to say, like, it's a pretty trippy cover, and it has like color dissonance, if that even means anything, but it's very imposing. It stands out, and I think it was very interesting. I thought it was, to use John's word, it's a very daring art.
Ricky, did you just use the phrase color dissonance?
Is that... Yes,
I'm saying I'm very impressed. Did you make up that phrase, or is that like a phrase that they use in like printing or something? I mean,
I just came up with it myself. I'm not taking credit for it.
Well, I think you should. That's an excellent phrase and an excellent use of that phrase. I've never heard that before, and I think
here you go. Here's the quote that I've been looking for, and this popped out of my head. So at what in the official write-up for this, the official press release for it, one of the things in there that struck me was someone said that Fucked Up have made their Screamadelica. So they're referring here to the Primal Scream record, Screamadelica, which was the moment where, you know, this band that was, you know, a pretty traditional British rock band up until that moment, like, completely blew up their sound and became like one of the first like house music acts, right? Where Primal Scream all of a sudden went and changed from like a band with guitars and drums and a lead singer and, you know, everything was conventional, to, you know, something that was totally wildly viciously different. And if you think even about how like Screamadelica works as an album, the first song on Screamadelica, which is what is it, John? Moving On Up, right? If you listen to Moving On Up off of Primal Scream's Screamadelica, that song is like almost purposefully by the numbers a Rolling Stones song. Like it has, like it sounds like a Rolling Stones song. It's structured like one. Like it is a like traditional feel good sort of like 60s rock song. And then, you know, by the time you get to like, you know, fucking like Moving On Up or Step Inside This House or anything else that's on there, and not Moving On Up, that was the one I just said, like the other songs on that record, it is no longer a rock band at that point. Like it becomes this just bizarre something, you know, bizarre record that like of course became the sound of, you know, of club music at the time, of dance music at the time, but no one anticipated that necessarily coming into Screamadelica. So you look at something like this, where you have like Raise Your Voice, Joyce, which is the first song that we've heard from it, which is, you know, it's a punk song. It's like a Buzzcocksy at times, a little bit hardcore, a little bit traditional, fucked up kind of punk rock song. But that's song two on this record. And this is a song, the record with 18 songs, and they're comparing it to Screamadelica.
It's going to have quite the intro.
They are at least in this press release, they are leading up to the idea that like by the time you get to track 18 on this thing, it's not at all what you recognize, and that's pretty exciting.
Yes.
I just wanted to finish some other thoughts I had. I know I'm not like a hater of this band. I don't know. Just things that just really just don't click. I don't know. I mean, Damien, if you're listening, I was at the El Rey show in 2014. I mean, I it was a great show. But my question is, did you? Because I listened to this song twice. I felt like the instruments were overpowering him. Did you guys get that, or am I missing that? Missing something there. And then also, I'm definitely going to give this album a shot. I'll definitely listen to it. I didn't pre-order it, I think, like you guys did, but with an album cover like that, you got to at least give it a shot. Those are my only questions. But this first track was cool. It just didn't really grab me to the point where you guys did.
I didn't have any particular read on the mix of it, but I was sort of, I've been riding on the high that this thing was even introduced. That's so fair. I'm not critically analyzing any of it yet. So quite potentially, I have no idea. But yeah, so anyways, this is the big news of the month. Like this has been the thing that has just dominated my imagination, I guess, in a way that like the announcements of a lot of records by like other bands that I like and I'm totally going to be into and listen to and everything like that, like haven't. And I that was not meant to be a seg, but it could be. But the...
Well, anyway, Adam White hates this album that we're about to talk about now. And
no, I don't. I know nothing about it.
And there's an interesting contrast here. Maybe Ricky can comment on this. Against sure. Me, they finished their new album. No one knows what was going to be on it, but here's what Laura Jane Gray said. Record is mastered, decided on a sequence and cover art. You know what? Even got a record label, too. What's effed up is that for now I'm not telling you anything else more about it. Andrew Stewart recently rejoined the band, and the guy from Refused is out. Here's the question. Effed Up was like, yeah, we haven't put out anything for a while. Surprise, we'll put out a whole new album with a whole bunch of stuff. No warning. Whack. Whereas Against Me, it's kind of go for the slow burn anticipation build. Ricky, what's your stance on 2018? Who plays it right? Slow burn anticipation build or whammo? Here's our gigantic double album with 18 tracks, single, alternate mixes, and tons of stuff and cool covers.
Oh, and I mean, in that respect, I mean, here's the thing. When Glass Boys came out, what, almost four years ago? I mean, Fucked Up have been very quiet. So I think the fact that, I think it was very cool that they just dropped this on everyone. While Against Me's last album, Against Me's last full length came out in 2016, but they also put out a 7-inch last year for Record Store Day. So I think that if Against Me hadn't put out an album in a few years, maybe like 4 or 5 years, like Fucked Up, and they just said, well, we have a new record, then yeah. But also, it's Fucked Up also not only announced the record, they released a single. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. Against Me, I mean, have been posting that they've been in the studio for a while, and there's no other details. Oh, and something else I meant to ask about the Fucked Up record. Sorry. Has Merge Records put out anything of note? Because I had not heard of them until the Fucked Up announcement.
Merge had put out a couple of F'd Up records before. Traditionally, Merge is an indie rock and even a digital music label.
Okay. Wait, hold on. Did you ask if Merge has put anything of note? Like Merge, in my head, is a...
I've not heard of them.
Merge is a pretty gigantic...
Oh, no shit. Yeah, okay.
Label in my head. I mean, they're one of the labels that, like, to me has always been... I mean, even, like, Matador has been in the same boat as them, where they're a label that I've always considered to be
Arcade Fire. I mean, that's pretty big,
like,
right?
Oh, Superchunk. Okay.
But, I think I did the Tyson Dronicus. Yeah, so in my head, they've always been, like, a big indie label, but in a way that I don't know the difference between any of the big indie labels.
Arch of Loaf, She and Him.
Okay.
Destroyer.
Ryan Wasby's Wax.
Okay.
Yeah. Merge is a big operation. That's my impression.
Cool. Ricky. Oh no shit. Okay. So my question is
Archers of Loaf, Ricky. Magnetic Fields. Have you heard any of these bands, Ricky?
I've heard of, right. Yes. Anyway, my question is about the Against Me record, just back to that, is was Andrew in the studio with them for this one, or was Inge still there? What's fascinating is that they're going to go back to a label, which I think is interesting, and there was some, of course, this band, in the true sense of the org fashion, there's just a ton of vitriol in the comments, but people were speculating about a label, and people were saying Fat. I don't see that happening. Some people were saying Guest Epitaph. I was thinking more along the lines. I could see Anti signing them, but I don't know. I mean, maybe Epitaph, but what label? They've been doing so well with just the whole Total Trouble independent thing. I don't know why they would go to a label.
There's a little bit of like smoke and mirrors, I think, going on with this kind of thing. So,
okay.
First of all, I mean, while Total Treble was the band's own imprint there, those records still had distribution. So they still cut a deal with one of the companies that is behind one of the big labels to, you know, help get that shit into stores. At least that's what I'm assuming. Like, you know, if you were a record store, you could pretty easily order, copies of Transgender Dysphoria Blues or of Shapeshift With Me from your record distributor, and then they would show up and you would sell them, and then you could get more. So like they were working within the system to the degree that like those records were distributed. Now, actually, I don't actually know any of this. I'm just saying it because I can't imagine that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. So I'm making a big assumption there. It was Total Trouble was not indie in the sense of like, you know, Laura was packing the records mailing them out herself, right? Like that. It wasn't indie like that. It wasn't indie like fucking John making tapes, right?
So yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
So there was still like a pretty major distribution system that was working behind those. And if you're an artist of Against Me's stature, you know, you can go and you can announce that you've got some, you know, you're going to be your own label and get, you know, hook up someone to do distribution for it. And I wouldn't be surprised if you were to really dig into it, if it was, the one of the people that commonly backs like Fat or Epitaph or anything like that to do it. Now, I don't know what any of those companies are called anymore. I used to pay more attention to this when I was looking at CD covers and things like that. But so I don't know. I don't know. Like, who are the big distributors these days? Like, is it still like Mordrum? Like, no, does that company exist anymore?
However, Against Me was distributed by In Grooves. So essentially, Against Me licensed the record to In Grooves. In Grooves is the company that does distribution for Oasis, for Mazzy Star, those kinds of people.
Yeah, so okay, so we're not talking like pure indie here, but by going with like a real label, they're going to have more, you know, more actual oomph and help with, on the promotional standpoint, on, you know,
that getting packaged touring together,
all that kind of stuff. Right. So there's, that was the first sort of this point that I wanted to make there. I mean, my gut still tells me that they're either going to do one of two things. They're either going to go to Epitaph because other bands of their stature are going to Epitaph. And we talked about this a little bit on the last
episode. What about Rise?
No, fuck that. I'm so anti-Rise, but I have nothing in particular against Rise.
Because they're boring. They have no personality. No personality.
Yes, except that, like, I don't have a read on what Rise is, except that they, in my brain, came out of nowhere and started signing big bands, and for some reason that rubs me the wrong way. I'm sure that's not the case, but that's just how it's always seemed to me. I mean, Epitaph to me seems to make the most sense, because if you look at the kind of bands that Epitaph has been signing that aren't little ones, they're bands that are later in their careers that have, you know, an established fan base they can go sell to, that don't give too much a shit about whatever branding the label's going to put onto them. And I'm talking about like your, like on the smaller end of the scale, like something like Piano's Become the Teeth, and then like the higher end of the scale, bands like, say, like Alkaline Trio or what the fuck? They just did their stuff, Converge, right? You know, bands like that, you know, if you're a Converge fan, you don't give too much of a shit at this point about what label they're on. You want to be able to get their record. And I feel like the Against Me fans are probably going to be in that kind of boat. So Epitaph makes a lot of sense to me. But I mean, I could see them on a record label like Merge or Matador or Polyvinyl or something, where it's traditional. Or
I think they're going to do a power move and do the thing that oft did, which usually works well. If you're a band with some clout, and if you're a band that is generally thought of as cool or used to be cool, you go to a totally unexpected label, you bring your old fans with you, and the new fans think you're suddenly cool because you're associated with this cooler label, and you get that bonus pop too. I think that's what they're going to do.
Unless they go back to a major.
I don't see that happening.
I don't know. Like, who, where do you see them going then, John? Like,
I'm saying somebody like Matador or Merge, like you mentioned, or one of those guys, you know, or maybe even Rosenstock. Did Rosenstock go to Polyvinyl? Is that where Rosenstock went?
Yeah,
Rosenstock went to Polyvinyl.
And
yeah.
I think maybe Polyvinyl, because I was very surprised about Rosenstock going to Polyvinyl, because Polyvinyl traditionally does not do punk, they do indie. But, you know, Rosenstock right now is kind of that indie punk crossover, ditto for Against Me. So I could see that happening as well. If I really got a bet, I'm saying Polyvinyl. But I'm saying any hipper indie rock label with some cred, that's where they're going to go.
So that means, if they were to go to Polyvinyl then, or something like it, like a more indie punk one, that means, do you think that would indicate the sort of sound this record would have too?
That's a great question, because traditionally, whenever bands sign to Matador, they kind of get lukewarm. You know what I mean? Not true with ChemCom, mind you, but you know, with Ceremony, they really did get, well, the juice just wasn't there. You know,
because like Shapeshift with me was a pretty indie sounding record
part. I'll tell you what though, going off. Oh, I didn't think. Shapeshift with me. Yeah, I actually didn't really listen to that much. However. Laura said the record is recorded and we have a label, suggesting that she's going by the Puff Daddy model. That is, the record's done, they take it to a label and say, here it is, do you want it, you see? Whereas the label gets their input, you know what I mean?
Okay, what, here, I'm going to change my vote. I'm going to go a little bit on the John end of like doing something unexpected here. Epitaph makes sense. I'm going to say, if I had to put my money somewhere and I'm going to be a gambling man, Sub Pop.
Mm. Ooh.
The only thing with Sub Pop is I'm not a huge Sub Pop guy. I don't hate them. But to me, they seem kind of old these days. I don't really know if people are – I know where it's going to go. I know where it's going to go. 4 AD. That's where it's going to go. That's 4 my AD. Bet. 4 AD. 4 AD. That's where it's going.
No, I mean, like here, look at some of the things that Sub Pop has put out in the last couple of years, and Against Me works in that context, right? So,
Mudhoney?
No, fuck it. Downtown Boys, Hot Snakes, Piss Jeans, Mets.
Well, you guys don't like my anti-records theory?
I don't know. Is the anti-backers even still functional these days?
No, yeah. Anti is totally functional. Oh, is? Actually, like, speaking of, like, I mentioned this a minute ago, like, or a minute ago, I mentioned we were talking about Fucked Up, that one of the guests that's on that label was Lito Pimienta, who is a Colombian-Canadian singer. And, like, so her record that she won Polaris with was, like, completely independent, like you know, released by herself on Bandcamp, and that was it. And it's getting reissued by Anti in the fall, like, for the US audience and all that. It's like, I mean, Anti is totally going concern. My only reason I think Anti might not work, or just like where Anti maybe doesn't make full sense to me, is if you're, I mean, Anti is Epitaph. So if you're going to be on Anti, right, and you are like front to back a punk band, then why not just be on Epitaph? Like, I can kind of see how, like, the Weaker Thens were on Anti, because they're like, you know, yeah, we're from the punk scene, but we're trying to do something that's, you know, we're not trying to tour with, you know, face to face. We're trying to do something different. So, you know, while they have the same connections and a lot of the same people like them and stuff like that, that's not the vibe they're trying to go with. So for, like, the Weaker Thens to go do their thing on Anti makes sense. Even, like, when, like, the Promise Ring did that one record that was with Epitaph, like, they released theirs through Anti, which made sense, because that was, like, the Promise Ring's, like, you know, super mature indie rock sounding record. So, like, I don't know if I can't see Against Me doing a super mature indie rock sounding record this time. I mean, I know you guys said that, like, Shapeshift with Me was more indie than their other stuff, but I don't know. That sounds like a load of horse shit to me. It was a punk record. It just wasn't.
It was definitely a punk record, but it had some indie leanings. I just listened to it today. It's grown. It's grown me up quite a bit.
I'm telling you, boys. 4AD. Listen to this. I'm telling you. Beirut, Sufjan Stevens, Deer Hunter,
no.
National, Merchandise, 4AD. So my vote's 4AD. Adam White, what was your vote? Your vote was Sub Pop.
Sub Pop. I'm going Sub Pop.
Ricky is saying,
I'll say anti-epitaph.
You can have anti-epitaph. That's a pretty good bet. But you can have both.
I can't have both?
You can have both.
All right. Oh, Ricky's got both. Okay. All right. So anyways, that's our vote. We will see probably in a matter of a month or so, I'm going to guess.
The losers have to cut off their left hand.
Fair.
That's fair, right?
But if since Ricky's covering two, if he loses, does he have to cut off both hands?
I mean, Ricky's coming out of this maimed one way or the other. I'm not too worried about that.
That's about how it works on this show anyway. So
speaking of things that no one knows what's going to happen, the Coup have announced that they're on the soundtrack for the amazing film Sorry to Bother You. And if you haven't seen the film, you have got to go see the film. And just as the film was a movie made for Johnny G., the soundtrack is a soundtrack made for Johnny G. It's going to be 9 tracks, although there might be a part 2, and all 9 tracks are by The Coup, but there are some amazing guest stars. Killer Mike of Run the Jewels and The Coup, Janelle Monáe and The Coup, E-40 and The Coup. And I am super pumped for this. Super pumped. Like, this is a soundtrack made for John G. It's like, I said, John, what do you want the soundtrack to be? I would say, Killer Mike, Janelle Monáe, and, well, I would probably say Digital Underground, but E-40, he's cool too. This soundtrack is looking cool.
This soundtrack is, I mean, there's a one with like Toon Yards, who I don't know a whole ton about, but like we ran some stuff on them not too long ago.
They did the score for the film, actually. They're going to do the movie score for the film. This is like the pop song soundtrack, or however you want to phrase it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, this seems like it'd be pretty cool. Fucking, like, Janelle Monáe is, like,
amazing.
Is she not the biggest? I mean, all right, sorry. Let me back right up here. Amongst the weirdos that I talk to on the internet, she is, like, the biggest pop star in the universe right now. I don't know what the actual pop world thinks about her.
She's not as big as, like, Rihanna, but, I mean, she's, like, she's major. She's major, you know, and she should be major. If you haven't checked out the Electric Lady album, you have got to check out. Janelle Monáe is amazing. She's like Stevie Wonder for the current times. She is phenomenal.
And so much of, like, her stuff is, like, it's like super nerdy, weird sci-fi shit as well. Like her discography is, like, incredibly interesting when you actually look at it thematically. So yeah, I mean, as far as, like, people that are on the pop end of the spectrum that are doing something interesting, like, you can't really find anyone that I think is, like, more in that realm. I mean, like Grimes kind of plays in the same sort of thing, but you know, Grimes is having her own problems.
She's
here.
Got issues right now. She's got issues right now.
But
you know, Monet, my love, no issues, Adam. Just yeah, no, awesome
none,
music.
None.
My question is, John, were any of the songs in the movie?
Yeah, they're all in the movie, but you only hear, okay. Like, you don't, honestly, the movie's so far out, you don't even realize it, and some of them are only in for, like, short clips, you know.
Got it. Okay.
So, anyway, I'm pumped for this. You know what, Adam White, do you mind if I play, like, a Janelle Monáe song, and then you can play, like, the last song, or maybe I'll play a Coup song? What do you think?
Whatever won't get us sued, John.
All right, then we'll do a Coup song because Boots Riley is the man. This is a new Coup track off the film. This is the Coup and Lakeith Stanfield, who does an amazing job as the lead character in the film. This is called O-Y-A-H-Y-T-T. I don't know why it's called that, but the Coup's amazing. And I just can't believe that, like, one of my favorite hip-hop groups ever is teaming up with one of my other favorite modern hip-hop groups ever and my favorite R&B singer ever, or one of my, along with like Stevie Wonder and like George Clinton. This is amazing. This is awesome. This is the new Coup track.
Hey!
And we are back, and poor Adam White, his song keeps getting pushed back. Adam, we will get to it, I promise. Let's blast through a few last quick stories here. Really, boys, it's the summer doldrums, but we got a lot to talk about this week. A lot of big stories. So let's blast through these last few if we can get to them. This is probably just kind of a who gives a crap, but Target recently opened in Manhattan, and in Manhattan, they did a faux storefront that kind of mimicked CBGB's, but instead of saying CBGB, the fake storefront said TRGT, and they had some band theme stuff inside the fake CBGB's. And people seemed to pass the point of outrage. If this happened 8 years ago, people probably would have been outraged, but now people were kind of just like, you know, who cares? The CBGB legacy is tarnished. No one cares. You know, it's just another example of gentrification. Quite bizarrely, several punk rockers were defending Target in the comments section, which kind of blew my mind. But that's a whole different story. So I don't even... honestly, if you're defending Target, then you're not a punk rocker. I'm just going to say it. Anyways, does anyone care about this? Or are we in the age where everything that is beautiful and good is now subject to perversion, and it doesn't even shock us anymore? And was CBGB even that beautiful and pure to begin with, or was it always really just a shitty club that has a cool name that people associate with, but really wasn't that special?
Honestly, I mean, when it comes to this stuff, and I always joke about this in the comments section, but this and the Sex Pistols credit card and like the $600 Black Flag shirt, I just laugh at this stuff. It's so dumb and it's so stupid, and it just, honestly, to me, it's just funny at this point. It's not even, because what do you get by being angry at this at the end of the day? Like,
that's a good point. What do you get about being angry,
like,
about it?
Like, you don't. Like what Target's gonna change their mind about this? It's already up. I think it's funny. I mean, I think.
You think it's funny in a way that is actually amusing, like something funny, like a joke would be funny, or you think it's funny in a cynical hatred of the world kind of way?
Kind of a mixture of both. I mean, who's on the advertising board of Target and thought this was a good idea?
Know that it didn't play off well, though. Like, all the punk rockers were mad.
Yeah.
But a lot of people know the word CBGB, and maybe, I mean, I wasn't there, maybe most people were like, oh, CBGB, this is cool, and they associated with that. You know, like Ramones shirts, you know, like, you know, like, most people when they see Ramones shirts, they're like, oh, neat, the Ramones. They're not, like, cynical about it, you know?
I'm just laughing at it because it's just ridiculous. That's what it is. And also, I don't know if you saw in the picture, but you can actually get the T-shirts that say TRGT as well.
Those are actually prop goods that you couldn't actually buy.
Oh.
See, now acquiring one of those now seems like something cool, right?
Yeah.
If you can acquire the bullshit prop shirt from the questionable Target thing. So this is the flip side of the coin of the credibility wars of punk rock of the 80s and 90s being over and lost, right? So this is not my idea, by the way. I'm stealing it from other podcasts that I've listened to. But, you know, there was a time, you think back to like the 90s even, right, where, you know, a band selling out was a big fucking deal, right? We'd all get mad about it. This band signed to a major label. This band did an advertisement. This band let their song be in a commercial. We'd all get mad and incensed. You know, other bands would get mad and snide about it. And it was a big thing. And there was a constant push and pull where we expected our bands to be authentic. We expected them to be above money and saying something important, and by it being important, it meant they were not getting paid, right? It was the Fugazi model to its extreme, right? And that was how we looked at everything. But now we're in an era where, you know what, we've kind of like gone around the circle and come back, and then we go, holy shit, bands don't get paid. So any way that bands can get paid, I guess, is good. So now if you were to turn around and you were to see that, like, if fucking Against Me put a song on a commercial for, you know, I'm not saying for Monsanto or anything like that, but if they put their song on a commercial that was for,
you know, baby food.
So something innocuous, something that like people could kind of get behind, whatever that is, you know, Ernie Ball guitar strings, Pabst Blue Ribbon, something that like the punks are okay with, right? They would get way less pushback these days than they ever would have got, you know, early on in their career, because at this point, people are going to look at it and go, well, hey, at least Against Me's getting paid. They don't get paid otherwise, right?
Well, shit. I mean, I've anytime a band announces that they got signed to a bigger label than that they were previously on, that everyone congratulates them now.
That's right. True. So that was not the case, right? We were in Slash, Against Me's tires because they signed to Fat, right? So there was all sorts of vitriol about selling out, but that's just gone. It's evaporated. Totally. I guess it's because we've gone, you know what? We're all poor. So whoever you can get yours. And that's how it works. Well, the flip, like the other side of that coin is that brands are now going to be like brands by like Target are going to be way less worried about setting off some sort of like cultural backlash by appropriating the language and imagery of the underground, because you know we're not going to get mad about Against Me for getting paid, so nothing means anything at this point. So if CBGB's is going to be on Target sign, like whatever, we all just live in this like cultural mishmash pastiche anyways, where nothing's real, you know, there is no truth, it's all just colors and lights and smoke and mirrors and whatever, right? And from that standpoint, you know, I don't see maybe people getting that mad about it. Or you want to go like to the like really deep in the rabbit hole, you see the punks defending this for some reason.
I wouldn't defend it. I'd mock it and make fun of it, and then kind of forget about it, because there's not much of a point of wasting so much energy
like,
on this.
It's like nothing has meaning. So at this point, you go and you buy yourself a Target CBGB's TRG T-shirt, right? Because it's funny and ironic. But then it's kind of cool because it's funny and ironic, and then you're just fucking wearing it and you don't know why. And then you're just wearing TRG t-shirts, and that's
like,
how
it's like at Simpsons. Are you being ironic, dude? I don't even know anymore. You know,
I've used that reference like two times this week. Right, that fucking Lollapalooza episode of The Simpsons like predicted the future.
Trumpian president cynicism. It sure did. So listen, speaking of things in a state of chaos, the Daily News has laid off half its staff. What happened was last year, a company called Tronc, which we'll get to in a minute, but a punk company called Tronc bought the Daily News from a fellow named Mort Zuckerman, who owned it for about 35 years. On Monday of this week, they laid off half the editorial staff, much to the staff's surprise. There wasn't any pre-announcement to it or anything like that. They basically said, get your behind out the door. The Daily News issued a statement, and basically they said, we are reducing today the size of the editorial team by approximately 50% and refocusing much of our talent on breaking news, especially in the areas of crime, civil justice, and public responsibility. One thing about the Daily News is the Daily News is considered, I guess, the easier to read and also the flashier of the New York papers, in that the headlines are famously kind of tabloidish, and it's a little bit more tabloid-esque the way they report on things. And I guess it's more biased than perhaps the other papers, but the bias is clear at the outset. Like, you realize you're reading something between halfway between editorial and news, whereas other newspapers sort of, I guess, feign or have, you know, more of a adherence to news, the fundamental concept of news itself. This company, Tronc, I'm like, what the hell company? Who are these creepy people with the name Tronc? The Tronc is just the Chicago Tribune that changed their name last year to Tronc for some reason, but they said everyone hates the name and they're changing it back. So I was a little creeped out because I thought we might have another LA Weekly situation on our hands, you know, kind of shadowy, secret, evil investors taking over a newspaper to change it to try to sway people's minds from behind the scenes. But Tronc is just the Chicago Tribune, which, terrible name. So not quite perhaps as sinister as some other newspaper takeovers or some closings of some papers that we've seen. However, it is yet again another symptom of the hardship that physical and media as a whole is facing. And it, to some degree, it is probably scary in that our hallowed and long-running newspapers and publications and press are facing hardships and are whittling down, especially in this age where correct information is more important than ever. Adam White, is Canada seeing the hardship upon newspapers that America is seeing?
Oh yeah, we're pretty fucked. there's you know, a few sort of like surviving national papers that are in this country. The Globe and Mail is, I guess, the true national one, but the Toronto Star is more or less like the New York Times of Canada. Everything else is sort of in chaos. There's a couple big media conglomerates in Canada that have been, buying up each other's assets time and time again. Like the local paper in Niagara Falls here has sort of changed hands between the two rival news companies three or four times in the past 10 years. And every time these things change hands, they just get worse. So, like, if you went and pulled the Niagara Falls paper up right now, you know, they've cut down any of their local reporting staff to sort of a bare bones. And outside of that, they're just running wire service stuff. And the service stuff that they run, it sort of, like, depends on which of the newspaper conglomerates have purchased them. So there was, like, a very right-wing conglomerate that had bought them. So we were getting all the wire service stuff from their end. And now there's, like, a lefter wing one owns them, and now we're getting the wire service stuff from their end. But every time one of these things change hands, they end up, like, you know, they do that death knell of newspapers thing where they say, like, oh well, these handful from these small communities, they're not making enough money, so they're going to become digital only. And by digital only, I mean basically they're going away, right? But they'll have a website that'll run wire service stuff under the name of the paper that used to exist. So yeah, we have all sorts of those problems. And we even have, like, there's even, like, crazier regional problems. Like, you could really jump into somewhere like, say, like New Brunswick, where all of the media is owned by, like, one family that also owns all the industry in the province. So yeah, all sorts of problems along those lines. If you want to go learn about any of this stuff, go listen to the Canada Land podcast, where they actually know something about it, because I don't really.
Adam,
John,
you said that in an incredibly Jello Biafra-esque cadence. You really did.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm trying. Recognizing that this is an actual the death of the local newspaper and the death of the news media in general is just like a general problem for the world kind of thing. What's gotten up your butt that this is a punk news story?
I am somewhat troubled that people aren't making this connection at all. And I feel as this is why I, not that I butt heads, but this is to a degree why I have detractors at the website, is many people come to punk news. Where can I get my music news? I want entertainment news about my music. I see punk rock in a broader sense. That is one of the fundamental virtues of punk rock, as a dedication to the truth and doing the right thing, or the right thing, at least as you can figure it out the best you can. And there is an attack on information. There is an attack on the president himself has openly attacked media and said the media is enemies, which is like the first thing fascist dictators do, or just dictators in general, not even fascist ones, just dictators, you know. And so there's an open attack on media, and more we see media crumbling. And as punk rockers, one of our duties, I would say one of our three or four or five main duties, is to, you know, pursue the truth. Isn't that what Joe Strummer is all about? You know, calling out bullshit, saying what the truth is. And when our hallowed papers, even the skeezier ones like Daily News, crumble and get beaten up and take over by shadowy cabals, it's important for us to point this out to people and to say information itself, communication and intelligence is under attack. We need to be aware, we need to be smart, and we need to defend truth, intelligence, analysis, and critical thinking as best we can. And that's why this is among the most worthy things to post at Punk News. Who gives a shit if some bearded guy – I was attacked at bearded guys. I'll stop attacking the bearded guys. I mean, really, who gives a shit if Kepi Ghoulie's put out a new album? I'm a huge Kepi fan, huge Kepi fan. But this is way more important than Kepi Ghoulie's, you know, re-recording of an album from 1997. That's cool, but that's fun, you know. This is more important than fun. This is awareness of our future condition.
All right, I mean – I want to hear the full throated response there from you. So I'm not going to argue with it. But I feel like you write these stories sometimes knowing that you're going to get shit from the kids, and you just
Adam, you're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe this. I have never once written an article with the intent to annoy people. Never once. I've written an article and said, oh, this is going to annoy people. But I've never once written an article with the intent of provoking annoyance by people.
No, but you schedule it and then you sit back and you go like, oh, this one's going to do it.
Well, to a degree, yes, but also to a degree, I'm with this kind of article, is I know people are going to cry, meh, about it, but I'm hoping that these kinds of articles will stimulate critical thinking and get them off their hindies and to stop thinking about Pabst Blue Ribbon and, you know, the newest record by the Bippity Bops that just played with the Ramones did 40 years ago, you know, and really to be more active in punk rock and doing the morally right thing. That's the idea. The idea is to elevate the readers, not to make fun of them or to beat them down. And in a way, it's tough love in that I'm challenging you to understand, not you, I'm challenging the readers. Do you understand why we're posting this? Are you able to recognize the importance of this? Which is kind of the same reason why I post stuff about like proto-punk bands like the Pink Fairies. People say, why are you posting about the Pink Fairies? Well, because they're proto-punk and they're important with regards to the genealogy of punk rock, and you should be aware of them to more fully understand the punk universe and the universe as a whole. That's my argument.
John, I just like that you give a shit. I don't even need to necessarily.
Well, I do give a shit, Adam. I give too much of a shit. I should just
John back. Cares too much.
I should just sit back and, you know, write about, you know, the latest, you know, Bippity Bop band that says the same old crap, you know. And I don't even hate those bands. Like, whatever. Like if you like those bands, that's fine. I like some bands. Actually, I think every band I like is actually a good band. But the point being is, if you like crappy bands, that's fine. That's your biz. But you can like crappy bands and kind of seek the higher level of punk rock at the same time. And that's what
I'm picturing the sticker that's on this album where it's like, quote, I like some bands, hyphen John Gentile.
Well, there's one time, this is no lie, this is related to nothing. I can't even remember the name of the band, but there was this band, they were like 16 or 15 or like really young kids, and they had a pop punk album, and it was one of these albums where their mom had spent like $80,000 to record this album. They had a press team and this and a manager and all this, and they hadn't even recorded anything, you know. And I was listening, I'm like, yeah, well, you know, it's whatever. So my review is going to be, they've got a good – whenever it's an album that I don't like but I don't want to beat down them, I'm going to say, they've got the fundamentals down. Now it's time for them to forge an identity. Whenever I say that, what I'm really saying is, I thought this was bad, but I want to encourage these kids. So that was the album. But then I got to the last track, and the whole song was them making fun of a overweight girl. And she was a real person. Like, it wasn't even like a made up joke song. Like, it was actually them like making fun of like a girl that was overweight. Like a real person. Like, that went to their school. So I savaged them. Like, I totally brutalized them in the review. And they deserved it, mind you. About 6 months later, I'm at the record store. I come across it, and they took like one line totally out of context and made it look like I was like saying it was the best album ever when I was saying the exact opposite. Like, I was speaking sarcastically, you know. I wish I bought it just so I could keep that as an artifact, but I didn't.
Just real quick about back to the Daily News. I'm glad we got the explanation from John, because I wasn't sure where he was going with it either. I think it'll be interesting. I know people start to panic when a company gets bought out and then, you know, half gutted like this. But I mean, I think it's worth keeping an eye on. Maybe they're going to be rebranded. Things might go more digital, maybe more video. I think it's just, and I know people, I know, John, you're worried about this, but I think in an age where everyone's basically getting, you know, their news on the internet or basically on Twitter, a lot of people are getting there just through Twitter, seeing what's going on there.
Because news on Twitter is extremely accurate.
Well, I mean, people post different articles from all over the place, and
they sure do.
And then you also have, you know, verified journalists on there too, talking about stuff immediately before even the wires do anything. So I think it was inevitable for print to kind of go downhill, and it's interesting. It kind of parallels the music industry in a way, not as drastic and quick, but I think I think I brought this up before. I think at some point it'll hit a low, like the print will hit a low, and then at some point it'll have some sort of moderate rebirth of higher quality, and it'll become kind of like the vinyl of news, if you will.
Well, so, there's actually something that you're touching on there that I've always been like conflicted about when it comes to this issue, and it's that like I fully understand the argument when that gets made where they say that okay, well they'll say like hey, with the lack of local reporting and the lack of investigative reporting and the lack of, you know, papers putting money into foreign correspondence and all that stuff, you know, you get less actual coverage of issues that are coming out. It's particularly like in small and medium sized towns and things like that. So it's like take a place like Niagara where I'm living, where, you know, if our local paper went away, well, our corrupt as shit, you know, regional council that's in the area, you know, that is just like scandal after scandal after scandal, no one would be covering that at all. So presumably, like, you know, they would just be proceeding unabated, you know, and the public would be completely ignorant of it. Like, and I get the argument where they're saying that, like, you know, local investigative reporting is like really fucking important, and that's why you should support, you know, local news. And I mean, on the conceptually, I'll buy into that 100%. The hypocrite in me, though, like, I don't get the fucking local paper, and right, and like, yeah, and I don't want it, because there's a degree, I'm looking at this, I'm like I don't have time to sit down and read a broadsheet every day, and even when I did get the paper, it wasn't really what I wanted to do with myself. So it's like I recognize the plight, but I don't really want to be part of the solution if the solution means like go subscribe to the newspaper. Well,
I recommend that everybody reads the newspaper, but if because the newspaper is generally written at a higher level. The newspaper is famously written at a fourth grade reading comprehension level, which is sad to begin with, except for the Wall Street Journal. But I recommend everybody read the newspaper because the articles are written better. They are researched more than internet articles. And I believe it stimulates a different part of your brain than just, you know, reading something real quick on the internet. And, you know, I think the newspaper is wonderful and essential and better than online news. Online news might be quicker, but it's crappier. I mean, even if you read like Fox News or CNN, you know, whichever poison you prefer, like the articles are so poorly written and like they only give like half the story. Like newspapers are just better. They just are, and they're
essential. Well, no, yeah. So I mean, I don't disagree with that even. I just feel that like someone hasn't figured out what the model is here yet, right? Like
it's send $20 like, per week to Punk News. And forget about the $20 and just keep sending it. That's the answer.
Like there's got to be like something's got to give here. There's got to be some solution by which there is like, you know, credible local reporting that happens by reporters that get paid for. And at the same point, I don't have to have someone drop off like half a tree full of car dealership ads on my porch every day. So like what's the middle ground between that? And I feel that like no one's sorted that out yet. And I guess this is what Ricky's saying is that like until there is some sort of renaissance in this,
it's gotta bottom out.
We figure out how to like properly value news reporting, but we don't have to like, you know, be like, I know people that I feel like begrudgingly subscribe to papers and pay for them even though they don't really read them, but because like that's the way they feel that they're like keeping that afloat. Like they understand the importance of it, but it's not actually something they want, but they're going to pay for it anyways, just out of like the obligation to the ideal of news media. And I'm like, that's not a sustainable that's not a sustainable system, is that like, well, you know, you can pay and then you know, but not enjoy it, but like pay because you should. Like that feels like church, and I don't want to. I don't want to encourage people to go to church.
And back to Adam's point about like, you know, the scandals that are happening at that council he was talking about. I mean, people are going to want to know that like immediately, and when that breaks, people are going to want to know about it. Like, for example, via Twitter, instead of, you know, the next morning when the newspaper gets delivered. So inevitably, like just by convenience and speed, the internet was going to just torpedo print.
But just because because something is selling better doesn't mean it's a better product or
to the contrary,
you know, this faster selling thing is usually the crappier product. Not always, but often.
I agree, but people want the information more that I think people want the information more than how it's portrayed, than how it's written or portrayed to them. I think the information itself is more important to people right now.
You know what we need, everybody, is we need that bullshit service that Elon Musk suggested, where all of his nuts will verify what's true or not, and then tell
nuts?
Us on a website.
Well, there is
not his.
Now there's a
genitals.
Parlor trick.
I meant his followers and fans.
Well, listen. Speaking of people that literally have changed the world, unlike Elon Musk, who is just a dick. Actually, he probably has changed the world, but not necessarily for the better. Speaking of people who have changed the world for the better, to wrap up tonight's episode, let's close out with a happy story, but a mysterious story. The first ever known David Bowie recording from 1963 has been uncovered. Back in the 1960s, David Bowie was in a band called the Conrads. He played in a saxophone. They decided to record a demo for Decca Records to try to follow off on the heels of the Rolling Stones getting signed to Decca Records. For some reason, they did three instrumentals and one vocal track. They asked Bowie to do the vocal track, even though he wasn't the singer for the band. So he recorded a vocal track for a song called I Never Dreamed. It was thought that actually that next year the demo was lost because the Conrads did not make it on the Decca Records, and of course, Bowie famously became a folk singer and did a solo thing and became extremely famous. It was thought that the Conrads demo was long lost. However, in the 90s, the drummer for the Conrads, a guy named David Hatfield, found the demo in what's called a breadbasket, which I don't even really know what that was, but he kept it secret. He kept it secret until now, because why? He's auctioning it off for big bucks. It's expected to go for £10,000, which is about $14,000 American, $16,000 Canadian. And two interesting things here is, A, isn't it cool that we hear David Bowie's first known recording from 1963? That's pretty neat. And is it weird that this guy kept it secret for 20 years and is auctioning it off now? Or what's the deal, man? What's the deal?
No, it's the perfect – he probably should have sold it maybe a few months after he died. Any time an artist dies, their stuff goes up in value immediately and they start charting and all that stuff. But this was weird. I mean, it was kind of neat to hear. I wouldn't be surprised if we started getting kind of more of these, sort of like the way, you know, when Prince died, they had a bunch of demos and unreleased music that they found in like his home or something like that. We'll probably hear those at some point as well. But this is just sort of par for the course. Once a big music legend dies or some artist dies, the stuff that wasn't going to be released starts to sort of leak out. So, but this was cool to hear.
Isn't it weird how David Bowie looks almost exactly the same at 16 as he did at like 70? He looks almost the same, like almost identical.
Because he was a space alien.
He was a space alien, man.
You don't know what a bread box is?
I know what a bread box was, but it wasn't a bread box. It was a bread basket. Now, maybe that is a bread box.
It's a box you put bread in.
I know what a bread box is, Adam. It's a box that you put bread in.
It fucking like does what it says in the
chat. Have you ever played that game? Is it bigger or smaller than a bread box? 20 questions. But we're not talking about bread boxes, Adam. We're talking about bread baskets. Bread baskets. Oh, well, I put bread box, but it was actually bread basket.
See, like this is the fake news problem here. It's like we don't even know what fucking bread box, bread basket. Like, what is it?
I imagine like all three of us are on the stand and some prosecutor was like, was it bread box or bread basket? Which was it? Which was it? You know, and we're like, we don't know. We don't know. We admit it. David Bowie's cool.
He is. You should figure out like what his skincare regime was and it'll keep us all young. It's probably
cocaine. Surgery.
You're going to say plastic surgery? I was going to say cocaine. All right. So, all right. I'll play a song and we'll finish this off.
I invite you guys to doubly insult David Bowie as we're paying tribute to him post-mortem. Nice
job,
guys.
It's a real insult to say a mainstream artist had plastic surgery. Okay.
And cocaine.
I actually think it's more offensive to say that David Bowie had plastic surgery. I don't think he did. I mean, I don't know, but I don't know, man. He looks pretty natural to me.
Okay, fine. So let's say he like slept in a hyperbolic tank full of oil. Something.
Could you guys just say David Bowie was a nice guy? Well, could you guys just say David Bowie was a great artist and we appreciate what he contributed to the artistic world instead of saying the guy who's a coke addict?
We were commenting on his appearance.
No class.
Oh, God. All right.
David, so I appreciate what you did. I've got all your albums.
All right. Speaking of no class, there's a band from Hamilton, Ontario called TV Freaks. TV Freaks is great. They're like scuzzy and angry and weird and loud and like just buzzsaw guitars and just everything. Everything's just like mean and banging in a TV Freaks song. So 3/4 of the TV Freaks guys have formed a band that's actually been around like gigging for 2 or 3 years, but I haven't recorded anything, called Uncontrollable Urge. Uncontrollable Urge. John, what is that?
That's a Devo song off their first album, but technically recorded 4 years prior to the first album as well.
There you go. So anyways, this band is also called Uncontrollable Urge. So it doesn't really sound like Devo at all, so I don't know why they took it. Aside, maybe it's a cool word. So this is a female vocalist named Angie Lanza, who's backed by 3 of the members of TV Freaks, guitarist TJ Carlton, Nathan Berger on bass, and David O'Connor, that's normally the singer for TV Freaks, is playing drums for them. And they just do this this crazy kind of wailing punk music where it's got sort of that scuzzy, angry TV Freaksness to it, but Angie's vocals are kind of like otherworldly at times, and it's a cool mix. It's not really, it doesn't really sound like Devo at all, so I don't know why they're leaning so hard on the reference, but hey, that's what they're doing. So the song is called My Head. It is off the Uncontrollable Urge self-titled LP that just came out on Schizophrenic Records. So here you go.
That was Uncontrollable Urge doing My Head off Schizophrenic Records. Let's wrap this bad boy up, boys. It was the summer doldrums, but we had a lot to talk about. Tricky Ricky, any last words, anything else you want to mention about your cool book coming out, anything you want to add, and any more insults you want to shoot at David Bowie, even though he can't respond because he is R.I.P.
David Bowie is fine in my book.
Fine!
But he he's great. Anyway, right. That's exactly I you know, I'll tell you how great he is. Actually, when we premiered the UK subs track that they covered of his, Suffragette City, I actually learned it in a half hour that day because I thought that was a cool song to play on guitar. So I do play along to David Bowie now. I'm outta here book.com. I'm sorry. OUTTA. If you want to check it out, we're going to hopefully have it out in November. There's going to be a Punk News article that probably be out before this podcast comes out. So you can find all the links there. There's a full description, but again, this is going to be all the interviews I've done, not just the Punk News ones, stuff from before I ever joined the staffs, other outlets that I've written for, all punk rock. There'll be stories and anecdotes attached to each interview, as well as I'm trying to get as many photos as I can for it. You can check out the Store Envy, and if you want it signed for a few extra bucks, you can do that too. Again, I'm out of here book.com, and thank you, John and Adam, for giving me the platform to do this here. And thanks to Aubin for the platform on Punk News in general. This really wouldn't have happened without any of the three of you, actually. So I really do thank you guys a lot for it. And hope you guys when it comes out, I hope everyone enjoys it.
John only likes David Bowie because he had that cameo in Zoolander, and Zoolander is all that John cares about.
I'm too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave me. It hurts. And I am too sexy for Milan. Too sexy for Milan, New York and Japan. And I am too sexy for your party. Too sexy for your party. No way I'm disco dancing. I'm a model, you know what I mean. And I do my little turn on the catwalk, yeah, on the catwalk, on the catwalk, yeah, I do my little turn on the catwalk. By far. And I'm too sexy for my hat. Too sexy for my hat. What you think about that? I'm a model, you know what I mean. And I do my little turn on the catwalk. Yeah, on the catwalk. On the catwalk. Yeah, I shake my little tush on the catwalk. Catwalk, yeah, I shake my little tush on the catwalk.